Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Yesterday came this news concerning education in the United States. The Department of Education announced a new Race to the Top style funding program. And this one is different. It's for individual school districts that create programs designed to close the achievement gap. Our guest this hour to analyze what this means for school districts in the state of Wisconsin and for the country is Professor Steve Correa. He's Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College and is a frequent guest on our education shows. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and you can also go to the Facebook page at the Kathleen Dunn Show. We ask particularly in answer to this question, are you aware of unique programs that really are allowing students to progress in low-income communities throughout the state of Wisconsin? And I guess the big question is, how do we determine progress as well? We would love to hear your comments on this, and I'm sure we'll have many during this hour. Professor Steve Correa, thank you again so much for being with us. Hi.
Very glad to be here, and good morning.
Good morning to you. So is this a unique, whole new part of Race to the Top? Is this very, very innovative?
I think that it's really a continuation of the original program. And, of course, to kind of do a little review for everybody at the start of the class, the idea with No Child Left Behind. And really, that's where a lot of this starts. You know, No Child Left Behind, which gets a terrifically bad rap. I think it's almost like criticizing Muammar Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein and No Child Left Behind in the same sentence, is really a little unfair because it did shine a light on a lot of these ignored or underperforming groups.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that the criticism of No Child Left Behind, in a thoughtful way, really is more based on the measures that were used, and were the measures that were used originally effective presently. And so the idea with Race to the Top, and again, as I just about always say, you have to have a catchy name so people can get their attention. In reality, this is the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, ESEA, but that hardly rolls off the tongue. Then the idea with Race to the Top is to be able to look at multiple measures of student progress, to be able to track student progress and not just a line in the sand, you must be to this level. So in other words, it's more individually focused. And then it has other aspects of schools and evaluating all educators, not just teachers, principals. My favorite one is to evaluate school boards.
There's something new.
That's a proposal as part of this, yes.
Interesting.
To evaluate school boards. So voters can't be trusted. And so that's an interesting sort of, okay. and then the two other parts of this is standards that help students have goals after graduation, meaning college or workplace. And then the last one is, which is critical, of course, is programs that address the achievement gap and mm-hmm. closing the achievement gap. So this latest round is interesting in that it bypasses totally the state departments of education, all 50 District of Columbia territories, those kind of things. They are not to have a role in this application process.
Hmm.
And that is very different because everything is always funneled up through, you know, Wisconsin,
yes.
DPI or whatever. Now, the rationale for that is in some states, teachers' unions have been very strong in blocking changes or reform proposals. Now, whether they're good or not, that's another issue. And California is one in particular. The Los Angeles Teachers Association, I think that's what it's called, has been very successful at blocking initiatives within the LA schools, and the State Department of Education has also not applied for these things. And so, you know, while we sometimes think of the Obama administration as being staunchly pro-union, this is a case where that's not true. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we can't use broad brushstrokes to paint these, although people are tempted to, but good old WPR tends to not do that, and that's a good thing.
One of the most frequent criticisms I hear from teachers, and I just happen to know a lot of teachers for some reason, is this teaching to the test, that a lot of teachers have complained that the measurements of success in the classroom can not exclusively be measured by test scores, and that Race to the Top and No Child Left Behind emphasize that. Are there other parts, less well-known parts of Race to the Top, that looks at other patterns of improvement, growth, change in the classroom?
And I think that's a really excellent point. A Stanford professor, Linda Darling-Hammond, recently did a presentation on that. We really know very little about measuring teaching effectiveness,
mm-hmm.
broadly speaking, but we do know that just zeroing in on measuring teaching effectiveness by the results of our students' scores, we don't know if that's a good thing or not, but it's a simple answer to a complex problem.
Yes.
And all teachers, I think, intuitively, all parents know, my child is more than the report card they bring home. My child is also more than the dented fender that's out in the garage. And my child is more than the vegetables they won't eat. So it's a whole constellation of everything here. And one of the neat things, though, about Race to the Top is they're not saying that it has to include only student test scores. In fact, they have this word significant, that it has to have, teacher assessment has to include significant aspects of student test scores. But districts are really allowed to be able to present some innovative programs, perhaps of peer evaluations, perhaps of teachers understanding data analysis, effective programs, interventions, you know, a little of this, a little of that. It's the art of teaching. And so, but it's not a one-size-fits-all. And that's where, if you go up a notch, the assessment of principles is a big part of Race to the Top. And we've never done that very well either.
Mm-hmm.
And so principals are rethinking their jobs. Gee, okay, I deal with students and discipline and troubles and parents and curricula. Ooh, now I have to not just go in twice a year or something to watch a teacher. We need to be able to talk about tests and assessment and measurement. And, you know, it's more complex. Is it possible? Oh, yeah. But it's a little scary because there hasn't been a tradition of that kind of rich and complex assessment before. And teachers are concerned, rightly so, that the assessment of them will be narrowed to, let's separate the wheat from the chaff, let's get the good teachers in, the bad teachers out, and it's going to be for job, holding your job and not job improvement. And if it's more holistic and it looks at how can we do this better, I think you'll see teachers jump on board and be more confident in it. But if it's just to say, okay, you're go get another job, whoa, that puts morale right in the mode. Yeah.
Tell me more about the nuts and bolts of these federal grants. How can a district be eligible?
It's interesting. Of course, you have to have 40% free and reduced lunch. Now, the federal guidelines for that is about $29,000 family income for a family of four. You would then get free lunch. Now, can you just imagine raising a family of four on $29,000?
Very difficult.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And then you get reduced if you're somewhere between $29,000 and $41,000 for a family of four. Boy, they're living high on the hog. And then over $41,000, you get nothing. So it's under 40% or more of the district has to be free and reduced. So in Wisconsin, again, we have a small number of large districts. So it's about 50% of the students, but it's really only about 30, 35 school districts that are eligible. However,
out of how many?
Out of about 430 some in the state. However, smaller districts can combine to be able to submit. Now, I'm not quite sure how they determine how they get that threshold of 40%, but for example, the Appleton Area School District has about 38% free and reduced lunch. They don't qualify. Beloit, Madison, Green Bay, Milwaukee, of course, Racine do qualify. The other thing is they have to have at least 2,500 students. So this is targeting those populations that really do have a lot of, you know, they're the larger districts and they're the ones that have the biggest achievement gap. So they're going for the biggest bang for their buck with this kind of a grant program.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about the achievement gap, it's very large when you look at minority population. Does that mean that most of the money will go to those school districts in the state that have large minority populations?
There is a direct correlation between, you know, socioeconomic status, non-white population, and the achievement gap. So it would seem, if you could extrapolate, that chances are, if there are successful applicants in the state, you know, they're already predetermined to be these types of districts. And so clearly it'll go to districts like, you know, more like Milwaukee or Racine. And chances are not to, for an example of a district like Bayfield, which is beautiful this time of year.
I'm sure.
Which interestingly has a free and reduced lunch rate of over 70%.
Really?
Now, that isn't that amazing?
Yes.
But they don't have that threshold of population. Now, some of that may be with some of the population, obviously the population that's up there, I'm not quite sure how that's comprised, but those are DPI numbers. You know, Boscobel has almost 60% free and reduced lunch. But again, they don't meet that threshold of 2,500 students. And a way to think about that is, you know, in essence, a graduating class of about 200.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and if you go all the way through, something like that. So, yeah, it's targeted for most of the larger school districts around the United States or perhaps mid-sized. But this nice little opportunity for districts to combine and perhaps come up with some innovative program to address these students and their achievement gap. Hopefully, they're spending more time looking at high school and what can we do with the senior year. I heard the relatively new superintendent there in Milwaukee talking about that and looking at ways to make senior years more engaging. And so that would be one option. So they're looking at innovative programs to connect going to college, going to work, going to career.
Mm-hmm. So if you were in some school district somewhere in the state of Wisconsin and you were listening to yourself and you were thinking, I'd really like to get some of that money, what would you do? Would you do something that's really out of the box, that's just terribly innovative that nobody or almost nobody ever thought of before, or would you capitalize on something that Race to the Top and federal funds have looked favorably on in the past?
Yeah, you know, it's like that old line, do you feel lucky? I think that most districts are probably going to look to existing programs that clearly have an effect on retention, and then where they track their students going on from retention. For example, in the West DePere School District up next to the campus where I teach, there's a phenomenal charter school called the Phantom Knight School of Opportunity. One of the things that this school requires is a post-graduation plan of acceptance to either some institution of higher education or a career plan that has to be approved by a group of people. And so what they're saying is you're not just done when you're done. You have a purpose to go. Appleton has, Appleton, the home of charter schools, has a phenomenally effective career academy that's housed at Appleton North High School that has been very effective. And it's DECA-like. But it's also not quite that, in that it helps students to focus on career choices and to explore those in thoughtful, meaningful ways. There's a variety of these kind of programs around the state. And my bet is, because this is one-time money. So think of it sort of as a way, here's a little extra money to get some options on your car. It's not so much that you can get a brand new car. It's not enough money to develop brand new programs. It is a way to be able to perhaps measure more effectively, perhaps target students, perhaps provide some support for them. Mm-hmm. But I think districts are going to look at, what do we do that's good? Let's try to get rid of what we do that might not be as effective, and then let's try to capitalize on that. And again, it's a relatively short time frame, because I think these applications have to be in the next 3 months.
Oh my gosh, how much money is it?
Well, total, and this is interesting, I've spent some time trying to find out where this money came from. One source said it was from the stimulus money that was granted way back when.
Oh, my.
That $5.3 billion.
Yes.
But then another source said that in reality it wasn't stimulus money. It was recently designated from Congress, and it was a little over $500 million. So, geez, who even balances their checkbook with that amount? But a $400 million or so of that is designated to be distributed in this. So, you know, another aspect of this is federal, or I should say congressional, oversight of this is really in question, because Congress is so locked up with getting anything done. The Education Act, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, has not been reauthorized, or they call it No Child Left Behind, has not been reauthorized. So the Department of Education is out in front making changes without congressional input. And there's terrific argument back and forth. Wait a minute, can you guys even do that? For example, can the Defense Department just decide to go out and buy a new battle group? Well, you know, they have hearings, et cetera, in Congress about this stuff. If anybody remembers the Osprey and that whole debacle, well, that isn't taking place with this. So our whole process of oversight is locked up. And the House chairman of one of the education committees, who is Klein, who's from the Twin Cities, is saying, wait a minute, we don't know what we're doing, and I don't think you can do this anyway. And, it's sort of like if a congressman yells in the woods and nobody hears, does it count? And things are so locked up that they're doing this by fiat.
Hmm.
And it's really not an effective way to do policy, because you don't have input and hearings and support
right. And
momentum. And, you know, it's we know what's right. Well, if we know what's right, but there's a right way to do it, but gee, they can't get the right way to operate. And boy, you know, so they're trying to be innovative, but the system is gummed up.
Yeah. We welcome more phone calls. We're going to start taking phone calls momentarily. Professor Steve Correa is our guest, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College. The U.S. Department of Education announcing yesterday a new Race to the Top style funding program. This one, individual school districts creating programs designed to close the achievement gaps, so there are specifications as to which districts can apply. The department is seeking comment on the draft proposal and intends to release final guidelines by July. Applications from districts would be due by September or October, and the awards would be announced before the end of the year, according to today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So it's all quick. So let's go to you. What are you going to apply for these kinds of funds? And the overall question is, you know, it's a huge question. We've been trying to figure this out for a long time. What is it that we need to do to be able to close the achievement gap and to really allow students to progress? Do we need terrific teachers? Do we need a new senior year, as the superintendent of MPS suggested? Do we need something that we haven't even talked about yet? What is it that we need? Here's the number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, or you can leave messages on our Facebook page as well, which is the Kathleen Dent Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow, during most of this hour, Senator Bill Bradley will be our guest. He's an interesting guy, isn't he? He was in the U.S. Senate for a number of years representing the state of New Jersey. He was a candidate for the Democratic nomination for president, and he was an Olympic gold medalist in 1964 and a professional basketball player with the New York Knicks from 67 to 77. They won a couple NBA championships during those years. He's a very thoughtful man, and he has written a new book, We Can All Do Better, which is the title, a line from Lincoln's second message to Congress. So Senator Bill Bradley with us tomorrow. To your phone calls, Orville in Madison, our first caller. Hi, Orville.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've been a teacher for over 40 years, taught in primary schools, secondary schools, and at the university. And I see the same thing. We're blaming teachers for what's going on, but I have a couple of questions. There's some kids who are doing very well, the East Asian kids, and the kids of Finnish descent are doing very well, although they have the same teachers. We can't lay it all on the teachers. What I notice is that the young people, they're not interested in education. They take it as a joke, and they do not get the motivation and the support from the parents. We have to change the cultural approach to education. That's the key. You can throw all the money at education you want, and the kids do not think it's important. The parents do not think it's important. If they take it as a joke, the Asian students, you see them in the Memorial Union and in the library, and they're as serious as death. They joke around, but they're in there every night, and they're studying, and I watch them, and I admire them.
Mm-hmm.
The American students come in 2 weeks before the final, and that's when they start studying. It doesn't work that way.
Professor Correa.
I think the gentleman from Madison, he does bring up an interesting point. And I think when you look at the reform momentum that has come out of No Child Left Behind and Race to the Top, we're looking at narrowing and having a more specific focus on what education is supposed to be about. And it is not intended to be attitudinal anymore. In other words, you don't see standards like students excited to go to school, students interested in learning, students motivated to learn. You don't see those things. Now, parents intuitively know them. People that value education intuitively know that. But that's not part of this. It's narrower. It's skills-based. It's outcome-based. And we're not as interested necessarily in the process by which that comes about. And it's almost like the idea is schools are trying to take on too much. We're going to narrow this, and we're going to do it with math. We're going to do it with reading. We're going to do it with a graduation rate. And yet, you know, I'm not only an education professor during the day, I'm a parent. I love it when my son comes home and talks about how a teacher has gotten him excited about something that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a difficult thing to measure. You bet it is. It's that affective realm, but it's also what motivates you into the future. So teachers are trying to balance now narrower expectations and career motivation that includes but is not exclusive of those. It includes a whole variety of things. The gentleman's also correct in that there are different cultures by the basis of how they view authority, how they react to authority, how their standards are set up of right and wrong and positive social sanctions that clearly do perform to better in American schools. And when you're looking, you know, one of the incongruities of this new program, I'm sure this has dawned on many brighter people than myself, gee, you have to be really, really poor to qualify for this. Boy, I hope we make it. And isn't that, I mean, you know, it recognizes reality, but it doesn't recognize the effect of that reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Orville's right. We need to be able to help incubate an environment where learning is valued and the process that goes into that. That happens by modeling. I thought his example was great of seeing the students study. Don't you think sometimes field trips should take place after school? What are kids doing? Let's go look at the ones that are studying. You know, video games aren't evil, but they aren't exactly helpful from 4 to 10 o'clock. Let's see what these other people are doing. So, you know, we have to look at those out-of-the-box ways for some kids to be able to see how all of these, you know, dots get connected.
You know, maybe we need to study people of Finnish descent more, or East Asian students, or for that matter, people who listen to public radio, because that audience is exactly what we're talking about. You're never done. We're going to school every single day in the best possible way. We're vitally interested in all of the issues of our time. We get new ideas. We go to the bookstore because we heard somebody on the air and we're so excited to talk about it. It's part of this community, and I don't know exactly how it formed, but here it is. So let's look and see why we all got together. Because what else have you got to do with your life except be engaged in the world around you?
You know, and that of course is exactly right. I tell my advisees as a college professor, who are your friends? How are your friends doing in college? Hang around friends that are doing well.
Right.
You'll find out what they're doing. Now, although and certainly, you know, we're not saying this, but for a lot of students, school hurts. Oh, it damages their psyche, their self-esteem. They're embarrassed. They're isolated. You know, Pink Floyd made a lot of money with Another Brick in the Wall. If people listen to the words, that's what that song's about. And so, you know, we don't try to have, we do have, as a boss of mine once said at the college, in education, we satisfy individual needs in a group setting.
Pink Floyd, huh? I don't think I've ever listened much to Pink Floyd.
Oh, Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall. It's
all, right.
all about being embarrassed in a classroom
oh.
setting and abusive teachers.
Oh, I'm going to have to listen to that.
Great video, too, by the way.
All right.
But, and it doesn't involve a flying pink pig. But for anybody that's ever been to a concert. but the idea is that we try to have this one-size-fits-all, and we know that that doesn't work, but, and again, this new program is trying to look at some innovations, and that's where charter schools perhaps do some things that are good, other kind of innovative programs, school to work, school to college, the college credit program, AP classes, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, we need to think broadly. What we don't do very well in education, quite frankly, is we're not so good at sharing with a really wide audience how we were successful and how others might be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get better at that.
George in LaPont. Hi, George.
Hi. A great, great program. I've counted. You two have used the word measure 8 times on this program.
You've been measuring today. That. Okay.
Okay. Now,
9.
I think we have 2 problems. One is, what do we mean by measure? We have gone to the concept, and it's very interesting, of, quote, the bottom line, which we've taken from business. And Wall Street, which, of course, is flourishing marvelously and always has, had their concept changed of bottom line to quarterly return on investment, ROI, quarterly return on investment, make profits now, immediately. Measure not in terms of impact on the employee, impact on the customer, impact on the environment, but how much profit can we make right now? Second comment, measurement. When I took my statistic courses, I learned that there were 4 different stages of measurement: nominal, ordinal, interval, and ratio. And I think we're using inappropriate sophistication of measurement on variables that need nominal and ordinal approaches to measurement rather than ratio and interval, which are easy to score, easy to understand and easy to get money for.
It'll make this easier for me because I kind of lost you with all of those descriptions.
Okay, well, nominal means boy, girl. We differentiate people by a name, tall, short, just black, white. That's nominal. Interval is I'm older than you are.
Okay.
We can associate a number with that. Okay? And then you get more sophisticated scales, which allow you to do wonderfully complex statistics to impress funding agencies and school boards, which are invalid statistics when measuring the kinds of variables that you two have been talking about.
Mm-hmm. Professor?
Well, I think that this is just a great caller. I think he should be a guest because he is exactly right in that. You know, it's like that old Mark Twain lie, or I think
turn
it's Mark
the volume,
Twain.
Will you, dear?
It's Mark Twain or Oscar Wilde. Education or, you know, lies, damn lies, and statistics. The idea is that the use of statistics and the proper and valid use of statistics is sophisticated. It takes a lot of insight and analysis. You have to know the limits. You have to know the value, the validity of the data, where the data comes from, what the trends are. And those are all the things that, this, I think, very insightful and well-informed caller is mentioning. However, teachers traditionally are not trained in that. And teachers are handed a reading score, a Lexile. Okay, you're 3.3. Gee, it's third grade. You're ahead. Whereas they're not really taught how to analyze, how to determine, how to implement a program, and how to analyze that particular function. So we're looking at changing what we want the teacher to do. And the caller is exactly correct that, you know, we do throw these terms around a lot. And but there are levels of these and expectations, and there are types of statistics. And, you know, it's not just a broad brushstroke. So, again, this is the sophisticated and complexity of the issue, and it's not just get more data and we'll be successful. He's
Thanks.
Exactly correct.
Thank you, George. Joe in Madison, hi.
Hi, is that me?
It's you, Joe.
Oh, it is me. Okay, so I have a couple comments. I actually work for the Madison Metropolitan School District, and, you know, I see that, you know, we constantly are pushing to close the achievement gap. We're constantly talking about it and revamping our plan. But I think that we make little progress because, one, we change our plan every 10 minutes, it seems, and also we have this firm onus of the responsibility of closing the achievement gap on the schools, on the teachers, on the school districts and administrators, when really what we're looking at is a pretty profound cultural divide between haves and have-nots. And I'm not talking about finance here. I'm talking about, I guess, social capital. I'm somebody who grew up pretty poor, single-family home, didn't have much by way of financial resources, but my mother always had her nose in a book.
Mm.
And by that, by virtue of that, I think she maybe unwittingly, passively, passed on to me this value of inquiry, of valuing learning and literature and just a love of books, which some of our families, many of our families, especially those financially or otherwise disenfranchised, they don't have that. That dynamic does not exist. It was not passed on to them, so they are unable to pass it on to their kids. So I really feel that if we are really going to move this conversation forward, it needs to be a more a broadly cast net of who is addressing this problem, not just the schools, akin to, I'm sure you guys are familiar with Jeffrey Canada and the Harlem Children's Zone.
Yes.
And, you know, he his whole philosophy is incorporating all of these different aspects, you know, from birth to college. They are there, and it takes a tremendous amount of money and effort and orchestration of different agencies, but it also produces tremendous results. Without an approach that's multifaceted like that, I think we're stuck and we're not going to make progress.
Yeah, I love callers on education shows. They're just good. He makes a lot of great points, Professor Correa.
Well, and I think, yes, of course he does. And I think it also shows that teachers and practicing professionals in social fields do look at the complexity of issues and do understand that, boy, there's a lot of nuance and you can't
sure
do this
are
without doing that. But there are push-pull factors here that are pushing against that kind of a broader view of ways to reform education. And those are things like the Common Core standards, which are math and reading skill-oriented. They're specific. They're detailed. They are finitely statistically measured. There's a score. If you're doing this, your school is going to be deemed as being successful. If you're not doing it, no matter how happy those kids are going out of the door at the end of the day, you are not a successful school. So there are, you know, the ideas of measuring success in schools are becoming increasingly narrow. And practicing educators intuitively know that's wrong, know that's not complete, but that's the political nature. And unfortunately, teachers are the ones that some of the media have successfully labeled as not only being the cause of the problem, why they're also the cause of wanting to bring in change. Whereas teachers are pretty darn student-oriented. They wouldn't be that way. But this divide-and-conquer idea where we're going to label teachers as part of the problem, boy. And again, that's why morale is low, and you're just not going to bring about change by deciding a whole broad brushstroke of people are wrong. And, you know, it needs to be more inclusive, more positive, more future-oriented.
Right. They're so valuable. Teachers are so valuable. Going back to this federal grant that's available, I'm wondering, is this like a one-shot influx of money, and you get your program and you get it up and running, but you can't continue it because next year there's not money available? It's just one time, is it?
Well, and that's a good question. I'll take the second half first. I think it's interesting because there's an election or something in November, I seem to recall.
Oh, no.
And,
Didn't know that.
I caught it somewhere. And Romney is supposed to be making his first education policy speech. I believe it's today or tomorrow. And now the only things that Romney has specifically talked about are two things: charter schools, and unions are the cause of the problem.
Mm.
Now, you know, again, whether or not one thinks these things are correct or not, charter schools perhaps are good, but we don't really know why. And certainly teachers have found themselves blamed, whether they're part of AFT or NEA or, you know, whatever they're a part of. But the idea is that this program is a one-time shot. Part of the scoring criteria will be the ability for the program to maintain. But that's why districts, I think, are going to tread sort of softly on this, because they can't go out on the plank because there's not a foundation of ongoing support for this. The gentleman that just called from Madison,
yes,
the superintendent there, NERAD, a fine gentleman, used to be in Green Bay, he proposed changes to close the achievement gap with about $100 million price tag or so, would have raised property taxes about 8.5%, I think, in the Madison School District. And the school board, the chair of the school board, said, that's nuts. Mm. There's no way we're going to get that. They've scaled that back now to about a $40 to $50 million program. But, you know, these reform changes are butting up against all kind of, you know, economic and reality issues and the election in November. So, no, this is a one-time shot.
And, I see.
Yeah.
We welcome more phone calls. Our guest this hour, Professor Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College. Our conversation this hour looking at, well, essentially, it's how do we make sure that students are motivated and excited and progress through high school and on to meaningful lives. The U.S. Department of Education announcing a new Race to the Top funding program. It's for individual school districts that create programs that are designed to close the achievement gap. It goes right to the districts. It's for districts with 2,500 or more students, 40% or more free lunch students to you. And we'll continue our calls at 800-486-8255. 1-800-273-6655. One line is open. Our email address, talk@WPR.org, or you can send comments on the Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to Sharon next. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning. Interesting program. A few weeks ago, maybe not a few, I don't remember how long it was, but Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, was on Charlie Rose, and he talked about his plan for the Chicago school system, and it was in place and what they were doing, and they were starting, I believe, if I remember correctly, with pre-kindergarten, right on through to the college level. He plans to change the school day, the length of the school year, a whole new way of teaching, bringing in people in the field that these children will someday be working in to teach them and to get them excited about what they can do when they get out of school. Because he was thinking that a lot of the inner city kids especially feel that there's no jobs for them when they get out of high school. There won't be anything to do, so they're not finishing. I think it would be well worth anyone's while who is in the education field, and especially who is teaching in that field, to get a hold of a video of this Charlie Rose program. It was on public television, Wisconsin Public Television, at midnight, unfortunately, but it was a wonderful program and a wonderful idea, and he'll get that grant hands down if somebody else doesn't get in there and work for them. It's just a wonderful program, and I would recommend it to anyone.
Professor Correa.
The caller brings up another interesting wrinkle that's happened within the field of education, and, of course, it goes to accountability, but it goes to accountability a slightly different way. Chicago has mayoral control of schools, like Boston, like Chicago, like New York with Bloomberg. And they have a chance then to sort of roll their general collective feeling as a population. Of course, they can combine garbage collection with how well are you doing with schools. But the mayor, you know, that's rolled into the mayor's accountability expectations. And Chicago, perhaps a little bit more successfully than some other schools have or districts, have tried some of these innovative programs. They still have some pockets of resistance, and mostly this is about teachers and some of the unions, but they are doing some neat kind of things. And although I'm not familiar with that particular kind of program, Emmanuel is such a great guest because you never know what he's going to say. when he's on message, he's obviously very erudite, and you can tell where his educational background is from. But these are the kind of programs, the caller's exactly correct. These are the kind of programs that are for students who aren't already going to the four-year liberal arts college, mm-hmm. who don't know that they're going to Madison and following the family legacy of, you know, sitting on, eating ice cream and looking at Lake Monona. They don't have those goals in life. And these are the ones to help the students to be able to see what the future might hold. So I would bet you those are going to be included in a few of those applications.
James in Oshkosh writes, take away the creativity, spontaneity, ancillary, and auxiliary impulses of teachers, and you have the current cooked curriculum, a whole lot of mush.
Yeah. You do have, there's a wonderful book, if anybody out there is interested in reading it. It's by Henry Giroux, and it's Teachers as Intellectuals.
Hmm.
And and it's not a new book. It's probably 20 years old. But it is a book that says teachers are thinkers, teachers should be thinkers, and teachers do not read a manual, find the part that's missing, diagnose the broken part, substitute it, and we're done. Teaching is an art, and therefore then teaching has all of those aspects that are required from it. And as a parent, that's what I want my child to have. So, you know, but again, as these expectations narrow, the reward systems narrow, and teachers are finding it almost a countercultural exercise to be able to get students to be interested in learning. Now, think about that. It's almost countercultural. It's like that wonderful book, Steal This Book.
Right.
It's that countercultural idea. Let's think. Let's pause. Let's reflect. Well, you know, oh, no, we've got to be able to get through this. And, again, teachers balance all these things. All professionals do. But it's you start to feel pretty beat up at the end of the day when you have people wanting you to do things that you question the validity of.
Cody is next in Oshkosh. Hi, Cody.
I believe in investing in professional teachers. I agree with what Gene said and your guest comment in response. We have to work at schools of education at the university level training teachers. Teachers have professional benefits, but they have a mediocre training, and it gets intelligent teachers that know how to jump through hoops, and that's the kind of teachers you end up with, I think.
Professor Correa.
Yeah, and some of the there are some neat kind of education programs going on. But I think he's right in that the teachers that were produced two or three decades ago, I guess I should look in the mirror for that answer, would be very different than some of the skill sets that you're looking at today. You know, our previous caller talked about statistics. Teachers have to be able to balance a whole variety of things, individual differences, being able to target things, you know, learning theory on and on and on. And maybe one of the things to be able to look at is this idea not exclusively of a graduated license. Think about driving. Anybody have any 16-year-olds out there, you know, about the graduated driver's license? Maybe we need a longer incubation period for teachers to be able to go into the field. You know, like medicine, you do your residency and you get some training, and you know, you don't just walk out the door the first day and you're a doctor. So some of those models are being looked at, but they're expensive. They cost more money. And if one's a capitalist, you're going to continue to attract not the best and brightest to the field if you continue to make it longer and more expensive. So, you know, that's, again, part of those push-pull factors. But I think that the caller is right that, you know, we need to look more broadly at the skill sets that we want our teachers to have.
Kyle in Madison, hi.
Hi. Basically, when I was going to school, the kids that were able to creatively think, problem solve, and do all those, you know, reflect on things and learn for themselves had parents that were capable of doing that. If your parents aren't capable of critical thinking, you know, basic arithmetic and reading, it's going to be a struggle for you. And teachers don't get professional pay, so how can we expect them to be professionals? And why is it our schools hemorrhage money for private services such as books? We need a national book, not a statewide book or a countywide book, but we should have one book for the whole country, and the government should print it, not pay a bunch of private for-profit companies to gouge us on the price we pay for those books for our infrastructure of our schools.
Professor Correa.
Yeah, the caller's you know, bringing up an interesting point. We might remember, you know, if anybody ever studied the Progressive Era, there was this movement that appeared, and in essence, it was called gas and water socialism. And it wasn't in anybody's best interest, they argued, for utilities to compete against each other. And so there should be either municipal control or government regulation of those. And therefore, then we wouldn't have competition and we'd have regulation of, you know, gas and electricity and water. And that's in everybody's best interest. We have not yet gotten to that point in education in the United States. The caller's exactly right. If you ever visit France, there's a nice summer activity to do. But if you happen to walk into a fourth grade classroom in Lyon at 10:30 on a Tuesday, every fourth grade classroom in the entire country is on the same page doing the exact same thing. They have a national curriculum. England has just about got all the bugs worked out. They do the same thing. We have always valued local control. And so we have some budding of traditions and legality in the United States. Certainly that is a solution. I don't know if it is the solution, but, you know, we're always of so many minds in the United States. We have one power utility, but we have multiple school districts. So, yeah, there are some incongruities in our system.
Professor Correa, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm going to listen to Pink Floyd now.
Oh, good. Yes. Yeah.
Gotta go. Gotta listen to Pink Floyd. Thank you.
my pleasure.
Yeah, Professor Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College. Our conversation, you may want to get more information on this. Read the newspapers. U.S. Department of Education announcing a new Race to the Top style funding program is for individual school districts and programs designed to close the achievement gap. So get your thinking caps on and try to get some of that money. Thanks to Brett Jaspers for producing this hour, and thanks to Brett Jaspers for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. Great conversations will follow.